Yeehaw, we're back. It's the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 Fan. Happy Canada Day holiday day for most people.
Yeah, I think right? Most people. I do think it was split, though. There were some people off Friday.
Well, if you're off this morning, get
you're
up and listen. Get up and listen. I'm happy to be back. You can hear there's still a tinge of Nashville in my voice.
Yeah, you were a different person for a lot of that week. Certainly
I'm
when you were on
to
with
be
us.
Back
were you
to
on
reality.
With us Thursday?
Thursday morning. Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun
it was
fun
like,
week.
Well, you'll know this. Who sang Black Velvet?
Black Velvet.
Yeah, you had that. Oh, I thought you definitely know that. Record player over here.
Anyway, sorry. I'm still getting into the groove here, Justin. But glad to be back. Thanks to Gunner for filling in last week while I was yeehawing it up down in Nashville. A
was
wonderful
it like tea
time.
And honey all weekend, just resting the vocal cords.
Well, then it was
sure
Canada Day, right?
So you're just screaming.
Gotta be patriotic. I missed the country while I was out of in the United States. I had to give back. But it was very, very, very fun. A lot of schmoozing within our squad.
Mm.
Getting people to come on the show in the next little while.
I did give you one task, which was secure a couple guests that
Buddy,
we can just
we
add to the
guests.
Rotation. You got some?
We got some guests. I'll give Danielle the numbers.
Okay.
I was down there
job.
Getting Fan Morning Show
beautiful,
content.
Beautiful.
We had a great time. I'll give you more Nashville talks throughout the show. But good to be back. And the voice is 88% there.
Yeah, it sounds like you're there.
We're good.
We're
working there. But happy holiday day if you're sleeping and you listen to the pod. Glad to be back. Lots happened. From I was off Monday to Friday, but then also just this weekend. That's the big stuff. And who cares about the Blue Jays? We'll talk about them another time. Maybe in winners and losers.
We might get to them. We'll get to them. At some point, we'll get to them.
So you were live on Saturday. I was listening a little bit on my way to a BBQ.
Another event, yeah.
A BBQ, and you were killing it. But nothing really had happened. There was
no
mumblings and rumblings. And
Twitter was down, so it was like almost impossible
to.
It was actually great for Sportsnet though, because like people had
good
to
for the TV squad.
People had to put on the networks. It was like an old school trade deadline day. Like the only way you were going to get it was live on television, because that's how Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick were sharing all the insight they were
rate
getting.
Rate limit exceeded is the
I still don't quite understand what's going on.
People on this weekend with NBA and NHL free agency happening. Rate limit exceeded. I don't know. Elon, we don't even get into it.
Yeah.
That's in losers, big time. But you're covering it live. Noon happens. And there's a lot of a flurry of signings.
Mm-hmm.
And Leafs fans are kind of quietly waiting for something other than Ryan Reeves, which we'll get into. And then yesterday was kind of the day where I think we got some redemption, because there was a lot of spicy, hot, angry takes, I think, by 7 p.m., on Saturday, that the Leafs really missed a lot of great opportunities. They said bye-bye to a bunch of Leafs that maybe they weren't going to fit in the puzzle piece regardless, but people went out the door and not a lot of people came in the door. And then yesterday, if you were patient, you might have been able to Trey live, Trey love, Trey laugh when you saw Tyler Bertuzzi
wow.
and Max Domi.
I had
Domi.
Tree climbing,
no,
climbing
no.
in our hearts, climbing
like
in our
one?
Minds.
Yeah, yeah.
I, but, you know,
you
I'm,
like Trey love,
I'm
Trey
glad
love,
we
Trey
both
laugh.
Went for a different
yeah,
pun
yeah.
there. That
was good one. We can get that tatted if the Leafs win the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so then they add some actual, real, great signings, some substance to this roster, so we can go through that. But it's the practice in being patient maybe before you unleash your hot takes, because free agency is not just one day.
Yeah, I think definitely important to know that. And also, like, a lot of the mistakes are done really early because you're trying to... Why would anyone sign right away? It's because they've been giving something maybe they're not going to get later. And if it's like that, it's likely something of increased value or value that may not be actually warranted. So maybe it was best for Treliving to, you know, pump the brakes a little bit off the bat, even though he's like, he made the first signing, or at least it seemed like, with Ryan Reeves, which seemed like, oh, you did not, you know, this was as good as it was going to get. It seemed like, at least for Ryan Reeves. But I felt really good leading up to, and I was on from 9 to 12. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking pretty positively, because all these guys who were non-tendered, who became free agents, just made it so that the pool was a lot deeper than we originally thought.
Yeah, it was like, surprising.
We were talking all week. It's like, how is Brad Treliving, in the absence of making a trade now, he has done nothing, mm-hmm. nothing to put his stamp on this organization at all the last time the Fan Morning Show was on the air last Friday. Nothing. He had done nothing. No stamp, nothing. So how is he going to make it so that he populates this roster to the extent that it needs to be? And then you think after 20, 25 new free agents are added to the pool, mm-hmm. hey, he might have an opportunity here to go out and sign four or five deals worth $1 million, and we can actually feel good about them actually having NHL players on a roster that's supposed to be designed to win a Stanley Cup. But then that doesn't happen at all. Nothing happens. Treliving is very, very quiet to start, with the exception of Ryan Reeves, who may or may not be actually viable in a playoff series moving forward. And we can, again, break down that a little bit. But he goes out and he is patient and he takes a couple big swings. One, I guess, Saturday evening, and then mm-hmm. a couple on Sunday. And yeah, I think this morning you're feeling a lot better about where the Toronto Maple Leafs are, certainly than you were a couple hours into free agency, but also in the week leading up to free agency. I think they did a decent job here actually sort of redefining what this team is and adding some impact players.
So they're, right now, four additional players. Tyler Bertuzzi, 1 year at $5.5 million. John Klingberg, 1 year at $4.15 million. Ryan Reeves at 3 years, $1.35 million. And Max Domi, 1 year at $3 million. That one's going to come today. The insider is saying that he's overseas. It takes a little bit of time.
That's the dream, eh?
Yeah. He's
just on a European vacation, whatever. Signing an e-document
Italy,
for a couple million dollars.
Yeah. I'll go to the team my dad played for, mm-hmm. hometown kid. You know, we'll get into the nostalgic of it all. You've got a McCabe and a Domi, so that's a throwback for many. Mm. But only one with term, and it's Ryan Reeves. And maybe the one, if that was how we started free agency, was a little bit full of, I feel like people are kind of mixed reviews on this. Obviously, I personally think it's a little long and it's a little pricey.
Yes.
But he's the toughest guy in the league, and he's going to deliver something that the Leafs have been wanting and looking for a while. But it does come at the expense of, you know, zero negative offense, possibly, and not a lot of great defense, but a lot of rock 'em, sock 'em, you're not going to mess with this bench vibes, character, locker room presence that maybe is something that they were lacking as you start to see people walk out the door and you hear rumblings, and we get into that about what the situation was in the locker room. He brings a lot of things that aren't on the score sheet, but I understand the frustration with that's a lot of. It's a little bit too much money for a guy that's 30, it's going to be 37. And when he's done this deal, will be 39.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems overly simplistic, right? Like, this team is not tough enough. So, well, the toughest guy in the league is a free agent. Let's go give him more money than anyone else is going to give him. Like, that seems very box check item type of thing to me. And I do agree that it is too much money and too much term, and it could age poorly and it could have zero impact on what matters the most. But there are other things that you hear about this team beyond just, hey, they're not tough enough, mm-hmm. that they don't have enough culture or vibe, or there's a disconnect between this and that. And Ryan Reeves, despite in addition to being the biggest, baddest guy in the league, is a bigger personality. He is a guy who's going to soak up the limelight and who's going to not shy away from the added pressure and everything that comes with being a Maple Leaf, and hopefully can start to connect maybe some things that aren't connected within the Leafs room and within the Leafs operations, because he is the type of guy that will bring people together, mm-hmm. that will shoulder some of the load, that's comfortable in situations that maybe a Mitch Marner, not to single someone out, but sure, I'll single someone out, isn't comfortable. He is comfortable in that way. And again, like, this has only taken you so far because they've tried this, right? They've tried guys who are veterans. They've tried guys who are tough. Mm-hmm. They've tried guys who have big personality. Nothing really seems to, it's like, oh, that was cool for a bit, and then it didn't really have the desired effect.
Like Simmons and Spezza.
This feels like another, and Spezza, I think, did in the end have exactly what you mm-hmm. wanted out of it in terms of, yeah, he was a great leader. He was someone who everyone looked up to, and he played really, really well for what he was given and maybe showed a couple young, whatever. I think Reeves is a little bit different in that vein, though. He is a guy who can have an effect on people, which I think mm-hmm. is important. However, there's a real good possibility you're leaving $1.345 million on the bench in the playoff series because you may not be able to afford to actually have him playing. And this is a guy who just recently was worth a first-round pick in the eyes of someone, exchanged teams, has been useful to some, has not been to others. But you can kind of just look to Vegas and be like, oh, that's exactly what happened here, is that he was a meaningful part of the Vegas team and then wasn't, because they found guys who could do some of the toughness thing, but also who were far better players in a guy like Keegan Kolesar, who basically made him expendable at that point. So I see it in some ways, but really everything else, and we've spent a lot of time on it to start here, but I think the other things matter far more than Reeves 100%. At the depths of your lineup.
His introductory conversation via Zoom or whatever it was a lot of, I'm going to make sure guys are together all the time. I'm going to make this locker room something, a point of pride, a point of emphasis. I want us to be a team. I think that there's been rumors and conversation that that hasn't been the way it has been. And you bring in a guy in that prides himself on that. If I saw one person every single night in Nashville, it was Ryan Reeves. And he was fully bringing in the energy and the vibes. And I don't mean that in a party sense, just like really wanting to be around people. And it's not around some of the Leafs too. So maybe I knew before I knew. No, I'm just kidding. But I did see him a lot. But you just hear really great things about what he does in a sense of a locker room energy. And yeah, he's tough as nails. So if you're worried about the Leafs not being able to fake toughness, we've talked about that before on the show, they don't need to with him. So whether his long-term 3-year deal, you know, ages poorly in year three, it seems like this is now looking at let's look at 1-year sample now. You just added two other guys. And Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi are guys with the same kind of energy, the same kind of feistiness.
They're tough, mean dudes.
A fierceness to them. So there's three additional players right now that you've added that bring something you are lacking and fans have been clamoring for, and the media has brought as a point of emphasis moving forward, is toughness and not fake toughness, right? So Tyler Bertuzzi, Max Domi, kind of the bigger deals right at this point, 1-year deals. So it seems like to me, let's say they get to play with some of the best players in the world, they're going to have a pretty nice payday next year when the cap goes up and they could cash in, whether that's here or not. That's long-term future. But both on 1-year deals is a bit of an interesting strategy.
Yeah, this is definitely the most intriguing point for the Maple Leafs in free agency so far, is that everything truly meaningful, and Ryan Reeves, again, yeah, it's up to, you know, your opinion, and you're probably going to cling to your biases when you're talking about Ryan Reeves. But the guys who are going to have a meaningful impact on wins and losses, or like directly because they are playing big roles, Bertuzzi, Domi, Klingberg, all signing 1-year deals, is interesting. It tells me that, hey, what I've posited about 2024-25 may be true, in that it could be a lean year for the Maple Leafs, where they are doing a bit of a retooling because it's the last year of Tavares and you have these new deals for Matthews and Nylander potentially, and it may be really, really hard to put together a roster, and they need to actually have that flexibility, because if you sign Bertuzzi and Domi and Klingberg to long-term deals, and it would probably be a higher AAV, there's going to be no room for the guys that you're trying to make room for, which is, you know, the parts of the core four. But I'm really surprised that they were able to convince them to take 1-year deals.
Especially because Tyler Bertuzzi
left
Detroit because he wanted to find a 1-year or a longer term deal, does the time with Boston. But I expected someone to lock him up. And we talked about this like 2 weeks ago. He was one of the big guys available for a 5, 6, 7 year long deal. So it's interesting. Maybe he sees it as the way that I just framed it. Like, I go play in Toronto, I play with some of the best players in the league, cap goes up next year, I lock in somewhere afterwards. It's like a bet on yourself year. Mm-hmm. But John Klingberg just had a bet on himself year. Where did that land him, right?
Poorly, yeah.
And it landed very poorly. Like, he's doing another 1-year deal, right?
So I guess part of this is Treliving has identified the guys that see it the way that you just laid it out, which is that, okay, the cap is going up. I'm at the peak of my powers right now. I believe I can have another great year. Who wouldn't, with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner potentially as line mates? And I can put myself in a position to cash in next year, which I think it's a decent strategy. It could go poorly. But
I feel like it's something they haven't really done either.
It could pay off big time.
You try something different, right?
But again, we went into this free agency thinking, okay, Tyler Bertuzzi is one of three, maybe, forwards who's going to get the most money. He's going to get the deal that, I don't know, some people thought Michael Bunting was going to get, where he gets 5 years at a big number and, you know, he finally has his opportunity to cash in. But he takes these deals. So it's, I think, from Treliving standpoint, maybe why it took a while, identifying the guys that wanted to do this but were also tough guys, changing the DNA of the team just a little bit. If you look at the team now, there's kind of a tough guy in every line, which is different than it has been. So very specific people, But both of them, and Domi and Bertuzzi, rather, kind of do the same thing, where they're going to change how every shift looks just a little bit. I mean, Domi is a tough guy, maybe pound for pound one of the toughest. I mean, he can ragdoll some big guys. He's not supposed to be fighting all the time, but he does a lot. But him playing with Ryan Reeves behind him, he's going to be even tougher than he was before. So I feel like in terms of adding toughness and adding some legitimate guys who can play with good players, I think Trill Living yesterday had a really, really good day.
Huge.
The one that is a little bit more interesting is John Klingberg, though, as you mentioned. This team defensively, it is tougher across the board. It is talented, especially up front in the top two lines. But defensively, I don't know how they're going to keep the puck out of their own net.
I truly saw the smartest people saying that he is one of the worst defensive defensemen in the league. That is not something you really want to add when you have had issues with your back end. You lose Luke Shen, and you also have Mark Giordano, who's going to be 40, and you have some...
There were retirement whispers a little bit at the end of the year. I don't know. We haven't heard an update on that. Sure. I think he's probably going
to
be back.
But you certainly need to find a good defensive defenseman. Like, there's still holes, obviously, and they're over the cap. Like, they have some work to do. Certainly, they need to figure out what to do with Murray and Muzzin, and I think that'll help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Frank Saravalli on later. We should have mentioned that because he'll give us the scoop. But they're going to have to, obviously, do some more tinkering. They need to get better defensively, and that is now the big glaring thing. You added some really great structure to your top six. You even help the bottom six get a little bit more scoring, and maybe that's still a point of emphasis, but your defense is a big-time question mark right now. And Klingberg is great offensively. He'll probably, take over Riley's spot as a power play quarterback, or at least share that. But he looks like a minus defensively, and that is tough.
Yeah, he certainly was last year. Now, context is important here because you can pull up the spreadsheets, you can pull up the, the graphic cards on Klingberg and make
a pretty
harsh judgment. This guy went into last offseason thinking he was going to make a ton of money. Did not have a great year leading up to that, and was not, met with a lot of good offers, at least in free agency. He might have overplayed his hand a little bit. And in the end, he had to settle for a pretty good deal, $7 million 1 year with the Anaheim Ducks, to put him in a position to amp up his value, maybe get traded at the deadline, which he was, but put himself in a position where he can sign that long-term deal later. And he's still, guess what, waiting for that long-term deal because he, to all account, mailed it in with the Anaheim Ducks. He was bad. He was a part of a bad team, clearly, but he didn't help his situation whatsoever. The numbers are gruesome when you look at his time with the Anaheim Ducks. And for that reason, nobody was even talking about him at the deadline, when the plan was, hey, go here, rehabilitate the value, and get traded and get yourself in a position where people can see you play a high-level hockey
again. All we talked about was Jacob Chychrun.
Klingberg was like a surprise when he got dealt to Minnesota. But then you think about it and you're like, wow, Minnesota got him for nothing? John Klingberg was a really good defenseman a couple years ago, or at least one who was very, very impactful in a offensively focused role. But when he went to Minnesota, and I didn't watch every Wild game after he got traded there, and I didn't watch every playoff game because it ran counter to the Maple Leafs much of the time. But when I did see him play, he looked pretty good. So if you take in account what he did in Minnesota more than what he did in Anaheim, which I think is fair, because clearly motivation was a factor here, where he was just like,
playing on a better team helps.
What am I doing here? I feel like if you get him in a scenario where he's playing with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner on a top power play, and maybe playing with elite level defensemen, if the Leafs really have one, at least in terms of 5-on-5 and in the regular season, I think this is a decent dice roll. And if you gave him term, I'd be really worried.
Yeah.
If you don't add another defenseman who is a defensive specialist, I'm going to be worried. But I feel like in an offensively focused role, which he should get, John Klingberg at $4 million is not a terrible bet either.
I do think there's something, and maybe this point, we just refuted it a bit with his one-year flyer. But Bertuzzi and Domi and Klingberg will have something to prove this year. They will be playing for something. It didn't really work for Klingberg last year, and you just laid that out.
And maybe doubling down is a good thing. It was like, you messed this up last year.
So
do not mess it up this
year,
because you're running out of chances to sign a big deal.
And you're not playing in a market that is going to allow for that, right? Like, it's going to be all eyes on this. So three guys on one-year deals with a big opportunity to cash in next year, that can really, really age great for the Maple Leafs, and we'll see. Maybe they want to stay, and maybe they come in, they do their part here, and they go make a lot of money elsewhere. David Camp, I know you kind of talked about this on Saturday, but Your boy?
Well, we need to talk about it because I'm a little, like, now I'm scared.
Uh-oh.
Because I
it's
have to stand
Justin's
I have
boy.
To stand by Camp at
four years.
More years at 2.4. Like, it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
That was surprising.
Can I separate myself from David Camp a little bit? I'm not really sure. I probably just have to, like, double down on all this.
There were other deals that were similar that I would have liked over David Camp, but he definitely has a role on this team.
Yeah, it's probably, and again, like, there were rumors like, oh, there's 2.5 out there for him, and he took 2.4.
Wow.
Toronto was like, wow, what a discount, guys.
Hometown discount.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, man. But again, I mean, it depends on who you talk to. We had Kipper on last week, and he's talking about, oh, yeah, Pontus Holmberg's a better player. He's going to play ahead of him. It's like, okay, the guy making $800,000. That's not exactly a ringing endorsement. I do think, though, David Camp can do what I like him for, which is take defensive zone starts and turn them into offensive zone starts for other people. That's a little expensive, or like, you don't generally pay $2.4 million for just that. But, you know, he does a lot of things for this team that people don't, you know, pay much attention to, and that being one of them. So hopefully David Camp can make me continue to feel good about David Camp, but it's going to be harder, admittedly, with $900,000 on his contract.
Okay, so the Leafs ship out a couple faces that were beloved, or at least part of this roster, for quite a while. Let's start with one that came in at the trade deadline, and this one hurt. Ryan O'Reilly, Clinton's very own, talked to his dad. We all became big fans of the Ryan O'Reilly story. Comes home, wears the blue and white, absolutely loves it, loves the city. It was a dream come true.
Until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't. And he signs a deal with the Nashville Predators, and that's someone that just hopped off a plane from Nashville. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Country music guy is going to love it there. But the thing that stings the most is hearing that it wasn't term or money that was why he didn't sign with the Maple Leafs. So it was something else. And what is that to you? Not term, not money. It's the fit. It's the locker room. It's the vibe. It's the way the team is run. Those are things you can speculate. I think it's fair to say that. There's a lot of conversation about that online. And for a guy that was highly touted as a vibes, proven winner, leader, Conn Smythe. Like, he had everything that you would have wanted to sign with this team for long term. So the fact that he didn't and he went to Nashville is really hard to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with him not being a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs anymore, but how he went about leaving is concerning.
Yeah, that's the part.
It seemed like immediately he made up his mind. He was one of the first people, if I'm remembering correctly, that did come out when they cleaned out the lockers and was just like, yeah, he's done here. Like, it was very, very clear that he's not really looking forward to extending this partnership. It felt the same with Shen, but then it wasn't. And Shen felt like he was coming back for a long time. And then, of course, he went to Nashville, too, because Nashville's just paying everyone a little bit more money than maybe. Well, I don't know. They got a pretty good deal with Ryan O'Reilly. I will say that.
Don't they have, like, no tax, too?
Things are good. Things are definitely good.
Life.
I mean, Luke Shen, he'd be crazy to turn that down.
Of course.
He was pretty smart to take what he took. But with Ryan O'Reilly, it's not like he took a ridiculous sum of money.
Yeah.
And there was interest from the Leafs. And for whatever reason, he didn't want to be here anymore. And before the Klingberg thing happens, before the Bertuzzi thing happens, before the Domi thing happens, it's concerning, right? Because the narrative is, oh, we just overpaid Ryan Reeves, who may or may not be actually of any benefit to us when it matters the most, because of a culture thing. So we're overpaying and we're overextending ourselves because culture may be an issue. And a guy who just ran 4 years ago a Stanley Cup winning room and Ryan O'Reilly is leaving, maybe in part due to culture. And I guess I'm kind of putting words into his mouth, or I'm making an explanation for him, but why else would he want to leave? Like, this,
there's really no other
reason. So much pride to be a Maple Leaf. His family, very happy to see it. He was very happy to do it. But for some reason, he didn't want to be here, whether he doesn't believe in the core four, doesn't believe in the coaching staff. Maybe he's a Dubas disciple like everyone else and just wanted to leave because, well, they didn't want to be here once Dubas wasn't here. I'm not really sure. But he felt like this was not a good scenario for him anymore. And that is concerning. And it will remain concerning because we don't know exactly why that decision was made. And we don't really know if there's anything at all wrong with the room. But if there is something wrong with the room, what is it? We're still kind of guessing. A lot of people are pointing at Sheldon Keefe because he was kind of pointed with criticism towards Sheldon Keefe, saying, hey, we could have done better here. And Sheldon Keefe came back. However, before we knew all that, and when it seemed like Sheldon Keefe was gone, he was already talking about leaving. So maybe it was... maybe we just like project this on him, like he's perfect for the market, when really he's not.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he didn't like it. Maybe he didn't like the attention.
I mean, he did say when he joined that it was a dream come true and he absolutely loved playing.
But it was for Nick Foligno, and then he was out of there too.
That's true.
Right? Like, maybe to an extent it is. Maybe for 4 months, Maybe for 2 months it is. Mm-hmm. You wish it was 4 months. But then it isn't anymore. And maybe he just wasn't right for the market. But again, when a guy like that, who seems perfect for the market, leaves for no really good reason when the opportunity definitely was there. This isn't Luke Shen. This is Ryan O'Reilly, who didn't get overpaid in Nashville. It's concerning.
So he's 4 years at $4.5 million for those that
Kind of shocking that he only got that.
I will say you can draw your own conclusions, but I don't think it's a coincidence that you add Ryan Reeves, who is legitimately the locker room guy, right? And so maybe that's hinting at something that needs to change. You add toughness, but you also add a guy that his press conference was literally about making this team a team, spending all this time together and being a big locker room guy. So draw your own conclusions, but it's
sad to see. Just to interrupt, I guess one of the other things too is like we heard rumors or reports about, hey, players don't like how it's all about the core four, mm-hmm. which I don't even know what that means. Is it media attention? Yeah. Is it the core four makes it about them? I don't really know, but maybe that's part of it too.
Probably
where it's just like,
too.
I don't have a role here. I just like John Tavares is the captain. I do captain things. Maybe I think I'm a better leader than this guy who's, you know what? Like maybe he just felt like he didn't fit into that. Into the core four equation. But again, that's all concerning stuff. Yeah. Because what about, is Ryan Reeves, just because he's tougher than everyone, going to be like, hey, you guys can't act like this? Like, again, there's a lot of things here that are concerning, but we don't know the full story.
And we're just
speculating. We just know Ryan O'Reilly wanted to leave, which is not the best look.
And that's hard to see because people loved him right away. And now he's going to go play for Nashville and see at Tootsie's.
And not be a competitor anymore. Like, that's another thing. It's like, this guy, it was like, he was brought here because he's a winner.
And he wanted to win.
He has already won. He's a Conn Smythe guy. This is what he does. And this guy not only turned down the Leafs, but went to a team so he could be mascot-ish, honestly. Like, that's what all Barry Trotz's been talking about. We need to fix the culture. He traded away all of his best players and just brought in good people. And it's like, okay, Ryan O'Reilly doesn't have that burning desire to win anymore, doesn't want to be in a pressure
really
cooker
strange.
Anymore, wants to just go to, as you mentioned, Tootsie's and be a guy who's making tax-free money. Like, maybe we projected something on Ryan O'Reilly that wasn't true, and maybe that's part of it here. Mm-hmm. But again, turn down the Leafs.
So no Ryan O'Reilly and no Michael Bunting as well. So he cashes in a 3-year, $4.5 million deal with the Hurricanes. I got to say, the Hurricanes, they went out and they made some moves this weekend. We'll do winners and losers. Hurricanes, they were busy. The Penguins were busy, too.
But all the people in Nashville love the Hurricanes, eh? All hockey writers love the Carolina
they
Hurricanes.
They love the feisty Canes.
Was Eric Tulski there? He was like on the stage being like celebrated.
But yeah, no Michael Bunting. 3 years at $4.5 million. I think I'm good having that piece not part of the Maple Leafs right now.
I will take Tyler Bertuzzi over Michael Bunting 100% of the time.
Alex Kerfoot, no longer a Toronto Maple Leaf. He was born to be an Arizona Coyote. 2 years at $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. Justin Hall out the door. Red Wings. This was a big one. 3 years at $3.4 million. Justin Hall.
Honestly, stunning.
Stunning stuff.
Stunning.
Stunning stuff. We mentioned it. Luke Shen. He's with the Predators for 3 years. You must sign it immediately. Don't even think. 3 years, $2.25 million.
He's been making $1 million for like the past 5 years.
He cashes in an upgrade. The Leafs lose Eric Schalgren, who's with the Devils. They lose Eric Gustafson, who I kind of forgot played for the Maple Leafs. He's with the Rangers. Noel Acciari as well. He's headed to play with Kyle Dubas. 3 year, $2 million average there.
So a tone is important here because you're running through these and you're just like, none of these bother me.
No. And that's the thing. It's like, you have to look at, would you have wanted this player to play for the Maple Leafs under this cap? And honestly, maybe the Noel Acciari, like that's a pretty good deal. 3 years at $2 million.
I thought that's why you skipped it.
I left that one last because I think if I was to pick one of these that I wanted, it's probably Noel Acciari. Mm-hmm. And other than that.
And I think you could look at camp and be like, why didn't we do Acciari for what Acciari
right.
got? I think that's fair. However, if you have Bertuzzi and Domi, I mean, there's some of that physicality. Yep. There's some of that the hits that you are leaving on the table with moving on from Acciari. I do think, and maybe it's because I'm a David Camp apologist, that David Camp has more utility than Noel Acciari. I know they both do kind of similar things. They both kill penalties. They both can play the center ice position. I think David Camp, though, is a better defensive player in the strict confines of, like, shutting down a member of the opposition. And for that reason, I am actually okay with David Camp being prioritized over Noel Cherry.
Okay, so this leaves a big debate now and a big drama to be solved. Sam Lafferty wears number 28. Does Max Domi want 28 in terms of Ty Domi's legacy, or does he want to start fresh? Is he giving Sam Lafferty a big old Rolex when he heads to town?
I get the feeling that separating Ty from the equation is not going to be easy. Like, I feel
it's going to be the Domi family.
Ty Domi's going to be hanging around. Like,
he has some celebrity besties.
Yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg.
He definitely does.
At all the Dallas Stars playoff games, he had, like, I don't know, people that were so random, like this, like, posse of superstars.
Like, Ric Flair was there.
Yeah, Ric Flair. There's
just a bunch
of
random guys.
But I think he's going to get 28.
He runs in circles.
He's going to want 28.
I kind of like that. I kind of hope he does.
Because you've already seen the photo now circulating Twitter of Ty holding Max at, which was, I think it was the ACC, I think. Anyway, he's holding him. And you're like, well, there you go. This is what we're going to see. Like, it's a great story. We wanted this last year. Or we wanted it. We talked about it last year during the trade deadline when he was kind of floated around. It's going to be the Domi story now for the next year. I actually went to school with the Domi girls, so I know them pretty well.
Okay.
High school.
You're going to have to get Max on the show.
I could probably finesse some of that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. His two sisters went to school with me, and very lovely family. But it's going to be Domi Central here.
I think Domi Central would have been, let's say Max Domi was drafted by the Maple Leafs. His second stop was at the Maple Leafs. I think it would have went poorly. Not to say, like, he's immature or he's not.
It's a lot to put on a kid.
But you have the name. You're a high draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got humbled a little bit with your first, I think, he's been in the league for a long time, like 10 years already.
He seems like he's five.
I know. But this feels like the right time for him to be a Maple Leaf. A right time to have that photo with him and his dad circulating. It feels like now it could be manageable when, like, if you told me 5 years ago Max Domi was going to be a Maple Leaf, I'm like, this is not going to end up well. But I think now we're at the point where it could. And I watched him, of course, like everybody else did, with the Dallas Stars last year in the playoffs. He was an absolute nuisance.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's what could have got away from him. Like, you got to be like your dad, right? You got to be tough. You got to fight all the time.
You got to wear his jersey. You got to be him.
Where is that? And I think there's going to be some of that where it's just going to be so highly energized that sometimes there's going to be some issues and we're going to have to reel him back in. But I think now a more mature Max Domi, more aware of who he is as an NHL player, more aware of, like, his own NHL career being separate from his dad's and separate from that story, even though you're merging these timelines and storylines just a little bit now with him as a member of the Leafs. I just think now is the right time for that storyline when I would have been fearing it 5, 6, 7 years ago.
That's good perspective. Yep. I think that's good. We have Gord Stellick on at 7, Frank Cervelli on at 8, and we'll keep doing winners and losers as well at 7:30. So we can touch on a couple other hockey things, including I got to get into the women's hockey news that happened this weekend. I was on the plane. I landed and it was like, oh my God, everything just happened. So I'll give you some of my perspective on the PWHPA and PHF, the not merger, the purchase. There's a lot to go under there. That's winners and losers, but we got to get into Fred VanVleet and the Toronto Raptors. We will have Will Liu on at 8:30 as well to break down, what was a pretty tough weekend in, Toronto Raptors history. Fred VanVleet, you have to separate it because I think the Fred VanVleet story is pretty incredible. Undrafted guy is now the highest ever undrafted paid player in the history of the league. Mm-hmm. He bets on himself. He gets the bag. He's no longer a Toronto Raptor, and you got to feel great for him, but you got to feel like crap for the Toronto Raptors organization and fans that watched him walk out the door for nothing, which was the big scare after the trade deadline passed. And he thought, okay, are we going to lose this guy for nothing? You know, deals are available that were there during the trade deadline. And nonetheless, he walks and the Raptors are left with nothing.
Yeah, like Ryan O'Reilly, I'm perfectly okay with him not being a member of the team anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, how it happened is concerning. It happened with the Raptors by you just losing a guy to another team is worth $130 million over 3 years. So you can't say, oh, he's, you know, diminished asset, distressed asset, past his prime. What, you can't say those things. A team was willing to give him a $130 million over 3 years, meaning you lost a premium asset for nothing. Not a good look for the Toronto Raptors. But we talked about the two evils or two potential evils at the end of last week and talked a little bit Saturday with Marchese. the lesser of two evils, I think, is losing him for nothing, as opposed to giving him the equivalent of $130 million over 4 or 5 years or whatever was available to the Raptors, where you're overpaying to keep things together, to hold on to 2019.
Nostalgia.
When you shouldn't. And I honestly believe the mistake is not trading him, not being able to keep him.
I completely agree. I looked at this deal and I thought it was too expensive for my liking here with the Toronto Raptors. And I'm, once again, good for Fred VanVleet. People love him in the city, and you're going to see a lot of Fred VanVleet respect, and that's not going to go away for what he did here. He's probably one of the best Raptors of all time. You can put him wherever you want on your ranking.
We were talking Mount Rushmore on Saturday. He's in my Mount Rushmore for Raptors, but like,
totally
he might not deserve it like on consensus, but for your
fan base, like, yeah,
how
he brought so much.
Fred?
He had so much pride and passion and grit. He always gave his all. Like, he was a Raptor that played with like so much intensity that it meant. Anyway, it means so much.
He embodied a lot of the things this franchise has been trying to tout, right?
Yeah,
like, they've been
100%.
Trying to sell themselves as a version of Fred VanVleet in a lot of ways.
Anyway, so he's with the Houston Rockets on the $130 million max deal. Did not want that to be a Raptors deal that's signed. But you talk about your asset mismanagement, you use that term a lot. It is the prime example of why people start to say, well, what's the trust in Masai? Like, are we still trusting in Masai? Like, how long can we say that? Because you lost Fred VanVleet. And you sign Dennis Schroeder as the replacement. And yeah, that's fine. Like, you needed to. It was an instant reaction sign.
Need someone who can play point guard.
I mean, he's not as good as Fred VanVleet.
Not even close.
So now you've gotten worse. And that's going to be a question, because now we're seeing that Pascal is now a hot topic still around trade conversations. So do the Raptors see this opportunity? You lost a franchise player and people want Pascal Siakam. Grange tweeted Sunday that, quote, an interesting player to monitor as the NBA transaction market heats up is Raptors Pascal Siakam. Mm-hmm. Keep hearing his name out there from multiple sources. Land is still interested, something to watch. So does this mean the Raptors kind of like swallow their pride and say, maybe it's time to do the uncomfortable thing?
I can forgive the asset mismanagement. I can forgive the fact that Fred VanVleet played Masai Ujiri, leveraged him against the Rockets to get an extra year, to get another $43.5 million. Like, I can forgive all those things if you start making the right decisions. But if you plug your nose, hold your nose, and expect Dennis Schroeder to do what Fred did and to try and hold things over and the seventh best team in the Eastern Conference, if that's just still the goal, then I can't forgive it. Then I can't forgive the asset mismanagement. I can't forgive that you read the market wrong, that you didn't see Houston coming when everyone else saw Houston coming, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just, again, we talked to Eric Smith on Saturday, keeps bringing up Saturday, but I think it's important context where it's like, okay, maybe it was a no-win scenario. Maybe there was nothing available at the deadline. Maybe there wasn't a trade that you'd actually be proud of. Maybe that's true. Maybe Houston just had the better hand, played it, you lost. You lose the hand of poker, sometimes you lose. But if you continue to convince yourself of something other than the truth, which is that the Raptors aren't good enough anymore, and they just lost a premium asset, and the guy who kind of held this team together in a lot of ways, then I cannot excuse losing a hand, not dealing with a certain individual the way it should have been done, not playing it the right way. I can excuse that if you make the right moves to follow, but I'm not convinced, even with Pascal Siakam's name out there, that they're going to make the right moves, that they see the writing on the wall, because it's pretty clear as day that the writing is on the wall for at least the iteration of the team or the holdovers from the team from 2019 and clinging to a past era. Like, that is over now. So how are you going to react? Are you going to move forward, or are you going to cling to the past? It really is, the decision awaits for Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster and this organization what to do next. And if it's just to keep going, then I'm losing faith.
I don't know if this happened. This probably happened after you're off the air on Friday, but Jakob Poeltl's deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a positive 4-year, $80 million contract. Jakob Poeltl came in at the trade deadline, and I think people were really happy with what he brought. And now you have a center locked up for 4 years. And
you could have lost him for nothing too.
And you could have. And that, God, we couldn't come on here this morning with losing Jakob Poeltl after you traded for a first. You decided to buy at the trade deadline. So I'm happy with the Jakob Poeltl. I like him. I think he's a good fit.
And I don't mind him on the team because I don't know if he's, you know, is he the guy that takes you from 30 wins to 42 and makes sure that you're... No, it's just he's a competent big. But just having him as your asset means that you can manage that asset. You could trade him. You could figure out after a year that, hey, we're going this way. We want you to, we're going to bring back some return. We're going to recoup that first round pick. Just having the asset is an important thing. And that's why with the William Nylander discussion, not to put it back to the Maple Leafs, but if you just sign the asset rather and worry about it later, rather than saying, oh, you're not going to sign this deal or you're not going to give us exactly what we want, you're going to trade you. Like that stuff is not good asset management either. Can sign the player, and then you can figure out what you're going to do later. And I think this is what they did with Poeltl here, because they didn't even know what was going to happen with Fred. They signed Poeltl first. They maybe had some idea, but they were still
Fred
trying to get
Fred gave them the
Fred
very
after.
First meeting in free agency. Like, yeah, I feel like that's kind of how it should work.
Yeah, I mean, people were really excited about that.
Yes,
like,
they got
okay.
the first meeting. I'm like, yeah, they probably wanted to know.
He's
okay,
still an employee.
Yeah, that's what you're going to give me. Well, let me go bring that to my new team.
And that probably was part of it, right? Like, they're going to do 4 years at this. That's more money than what you're offering me, Houston. What can you do for me? Yep. And immediately, you know what they did. They added the third year, another $43 million.
That's on himself. And I had no doubt that he would go that way.
But with Poeltl, yeah, just he can play. He can, you know, take some minutes away from someone who's not going to be ready for those minutes, i.e. Christian Coloco. I'm not really sure. But hold the asset and maybe spend the asset later. Maybe you can recoup that first round pick. You can still tank despite having Jakob Poeltl sign for 4 years.
Okay, so if Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi didn't sign yesterday, this could have been one of the worst weekends in Toronto sports. You lose Fred VanVleet. The Blue Jays got absolutely embarrassed during Canada Day weekend. Sellout crowds. It's your big weekend. You got the kids in the ballpark. Canada Day flag. It's a lot of excitement. And the Red Sox sweep you. And you cannot beat this team to save your life. You're now 0-7 this season against the Red Sox, who are a divisional rival, who are now right behind you, who were brutal to start the season and have now climbed their way up and are within grasp of the Toronto Blue Jays. Just disaster of heartbreaking games.
Mm-hmm.
Plays at home plate. Alex Verdugo, who, oh God, is rough in terms of might be up there in terms of most hated players in Toronto franchise, and it is just a very, very embarrassing weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, we're not going to have a Blue Jays guest on today. They're off today, but it's certainly a big eyeball emoji of a cause for concern is how they just blew this weekend.
Yeah, outplayed, outmanaged, outstrategized across the board.
Yep.
They did things inferior compared to the Boston Red Sox, who were the last place team in the American League East. And of course, it runs the record of futility against American League opponents to what,
7-20
now?
7-20.
I mean, it just seems impossible to overcome that. And yet they still have an opportunity to overcome that because they're right in the thick of the wild card race. I haven't been very critical of John Schneider, but something bothered me yesterday of John Schneider, or over the weekend rather. It was the play from Bo Bichette at the end of the Canada Day game. And like, you know, it seems like he's really, really reticent to criticize anyone. Like, everything's great. Like, if you ask about it, Manoah, everything's great. I mean, that 11-run outing at the Florida Complex
League. That was the biggest spin zone I've ever heard in my life.
And it's like constant spin zone. And he just says of that play with Luis Rivera, you know, not really giving a signal to Bo Bichette and having Bo Bichette decide for himself while he's rounding third in the most crucial.
This is a professional baseball team.
He says a really hard play for Luis. It's a really
That's
hard
your job.
Play. That's the only job.
Literally, you have one job.
I don't want to diminish someone's, you know, profession and what they do, but the number one priority
is that
for Luis would be making the right call in that moment. And not only did he, like, okay, so you made the wrong call. Like, you misjudged it. You didn't make a call. You made Bo Bichette make up for himself or make that determination by himself while he was rounding third base.
He's got a lot of other things on his mind.
It's not a really hard play for Luis. No. It's a standard play for Luis. Well, he has to make a judgment call, and maybe that's one of the harder judgment calls because usually it is pretty easy to send a runner or to know when to stop a runner, but he did neither, and I'm not saying you go out there and slam him, but at some point, maybe it's just like, we need to be better.
Yeah.
We need to be better. Vlad needs to be better when he's struggling. Jordan Romano needs to be better, even though, you can say, look at all these saves. Jordan Romano's been asking for a result like that for a while now. A couple weeks, he's been asking for a result, the one he got on Sunday. But even with your third base coach, just, yeah, we need to be better. We need to start making the right calls. We need to be as fundamental as we say we were going to be. And they just made as many mistakes as they needed to make to lose all three games and to make sure that despite being outplayed over three games, that they lost all three games. And I'd love to hear John Schneider just say at one point, hey, not about singling anyone out, but just based on something that happens, admit that this team could do a little bit better than it's doing, other than that everything is okay and that, you know, eventually we'll get all three phases of this game clicking. It just seems like at some point criticism needs to be thrown out there.
Yep.
And we're not seeing accountability from the Blue
Jays. You can only be like the jolly players coach that smiles and finds a positive for so long.
85 games here. Like at some point, maybe a hard discussion, maybe some embarrassment, maybe some accountability at some point. That has to happen. And it hasn't happened through 85 games.
And Blue Jays off today, as I mentioned, but they're going on a 6-game road trip here against the White Sox and the Tigers. Very much need to win these series at bare minimum. No All-Star starters, but Blue Jays will have Bo, Witt, Vlad, and Gausman going to the All-Star game after they lost all the votes. And everyone can stop complaining that Canada has one team and they voted for it, and then all of a sudden nobody got a starter.
Texas just put the whole nation to shame.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. We got the A-list on the other side. Gord Stellick at 7, winners and losers 7:30. There might be some Blue Jays in there. Frank Saravelli at 8, and then Will Lou to wrap up the show at 8:30. I didn't ask you if you did FanEx Cup, but...
We didn't.
Okay, good.
We didn't.
All right, because I was worried. It's a couple Canadians that were in the running there at the end. Mm-hmm. They might be winners, but we'll do the A-list after the break.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, so Wordle used to be the thing. Everyone was Wordle-ing it up always.
Did you hop on that train?
I did for like 2 months. I loved Wordle. It was like actually the first thing I used to do in the morning.
What was your starting word?
God, I forget now. Raise or slate? Anyway, I gave up on it. And I also,
Raise is a good one.
I started muting people on Twitter because it was just like all you see were the boxes. Okay, now there's a new thing, though. It's called the Immaculate Grid. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I've seen a couple people tweet that when I'm allowed to be on Twitter.
There was when you're allowed. Rate limit exceeded. It kind of started with MLB. So it's the basic understanding of what the Immaculate Grid is, and you've probably seen it, is it's a 3x3 grid, and on the top and on the bottom, the X and Y axis.
Oh, God.
I know. No, no, no. Okay, fine. The left side and the right side of the grid are teams. So there'd be, for example, we're going to do one. So there's now a hockey one. There's now an NHL one. Okay. And so if you want to play, it's at puckdoku.com, like Sudoku.
But should I go there right now?
No, you can't because it's blocked at our website.
Okay.
They haven't blocked here, but I've just, never mind. I have it available all of a sudden. I worked around it. But basically, you look in the first one here, will be the teams are the Chicago Blackhawks and the Dallas Stars. So we have to type in a player that played for both the Dallas Stars and the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's hard.
Johnny Oduya?
Okay. So we're gonna do this together. So now we're going to go Blackhawks. So these are the teams. On the top grid, it's Stars, Hurricanes, Islanders. And on the left side, it's Blackhawks, Knights, and Lightning. So you go through and you fill a person in. So let's just like, we're going to wing it. Stars and Golden Knights.
Stars and Golden Knights. Evgeny Dadonov.
Okay, and so they have to have played one game. That's kind of like the rule. Okay. Evgeny Dadonov. Okay, so now...
Who's your daddy?
Okay, so Tampa Bay Lightning and Dallas Stars.
Tampa Bay Lightning and Dallas Stars.
Behind the glass can help us out,
Tampa
too.
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Tampa Bay Lightning, Dallas Stars.
Brendan Morrow.
Okay, wow. Like, these people, you're killing it. Okay, so now we're going to the next column. Blackhawks and Hurricanes. I feel like this will be easy. Blackhawks and Hurricanes.
Peter Mrazek.
Oh, my God. Leafs legend. Vegas Golden Knights.
You got to do one.
It's too hard. Vegas Golden Knights and Hurricanes.
Vegas Golden Knights and
so
Hurricanes.
It's hard because the Golden Knights are only like 6 years old. So someone that played for both.
Ooh.
Who'd they steal from the expansion draft?
Ooh.
Okay, well, skip that one. It's fine. Lightning and Hurricanes.
Lightning and Hurricanes. This is hard on
Lightning
the radio.
And Hurricanes.
Lightning
Wait,
and
Eric Halla would have been the one I just mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Eric Halla. Yeah.
Okay, Halla. Lightning and Hurricanes. Let's skip that one too. Islanders and Blackhawks.
Islanders. Andrew Ladd.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, I think we're going to get this. Vegas Golden Knights and Islanders.
Guy in net.
No.
Robin Leonard.
Did he play?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Is there a time limit? Okay, no. Okay, so we have two left. It's Hurricanes and Lightning and Islanders and Lightning. So Islanders and Lightning, I don't know how we don't know this one yet.
Islanders and Lightning. This is tough.
See, we might not know the Islanders and Lightning one, and we need someone. Oh, you know who it is? For Canes and Lightning? Not a fan favorite.
Give me something.
Not the guy. People don't like him. Eric Cole.
Eric Cole?
Didn't he play for both?
I don't know.
Cole.
Guys, you got anything behind the glass?
It's
harder because I'm thinking to myself, this is bad radio. I'm freaking out.
People can play it. Okay, so we might have to go to break and think about it.
Our grid wasn't immaculate.
But this is what we need. We need people from the text line to give us somebody that played for the Lightning and the Islanders and somebody that played for the Lightning and the Canes.
No.
Okay.
I had someone, but no.
We need two players to complete our immaculate grid, and we can do this.
Okay, let's take a little reset, and we'll have it done by the
All right.
by the time we come back.
Let's take a break. We've got our guy, Gord Stelic, and we need to finish our immaculate grid. So help us out. 590, 590. Stelic next.